Running a learning business today requires attention to growing reach, generating revenue, and demonstrating real impact, all while navigating constant change and fierce competition for learners' time and money.
To help, we've curated a collection of free resources for learning business professionals. You'll find frameworks, briefings, and reports, webinars, and tools focused on strategy, portfolio design, pricing, marketing, and more, all created specifically for organizations that sell continuing education and professional development.
If you care about building a stronger, more sustainable learning business, visit leadinglearning.com/free resources.
That's leadinglearning.com/free resources for practical tools and strategic insight to help you grow your reach, revenue, and impact.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 110 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, we talk with two of our favorite people in the learning business, Carol Hodes with NIGP, the Institute for Public Procurement, and Diane Simmons of the American Academy of Dermatology. Carol has recently retired, and Diane will soon, so we wanted to hear and learn from their valuable perspectives before they head off to new adventures. I guess you could call this an exit interview of sorts. Before we do that, though, we want to highlight a resource, and we also want to acknowledge the founding sponsors for Review My LMS, a new initiative we have underway in collaboration with 100 Reviews.
That's right. As we mentioned in the previous episode, we're helping the folks at 100 Reviews, namely Ben Martin and Terry Carden, launch a new learning management system review site that's built on the same model as their very successful Review My AMS site. We're going to be providing more details about the site in the coming weeks, but for now, we want to acknowledge the four companies that have stepped up to help get it off the ground and to help create a very transparent space in which LMS users can review the systems that they're using so that other organizations who are looking for an LMS have access to that information as part of their decision process. We feel like this has been a gap in the association and broader learning business market for quite a while, so we're really excited to know that it will soon be filled with support from the following companies: Community Brands, Digitel, Next Thought, and Web Courseworks. We're going to link to each of those companies from the show notes for this episode, which you can find at leadinglearning.com/episode110. And if you're looking for an LMS, we really encourage you to visit these companies and see what they have to offer.
We also encourage you to grab the resource that we want to highlight for this episode. And this is a sort of Uber resource document titled, appropriately enough, Resources for Organizations in the Business of Lifelong Learning. We created this a while back, and as the title suggests, it's a document that serves as a single point of reference for accessing many other documents. In it, we've organized our tools, models, and frameworks, our research reports, and a range of other resources in a way that makes it easy for you to see what they are and access them. This document is free, and all of the resources it lists, other than our two annual events, are also free. You can grab it by going to the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode110. Or if you're subscribed by iTunes or another podcasting service, you'll see the download link right there in the information or notes area. And that's just one of the benefits of being a subscriber to Leading Learning. So, Salisa, I know with two smart and highly experienced learning leaders like Carol and Diane, it had to be challenging to figure out how to focus the conversation. There are just so many possibilities. So what ground did you cover?
Well, you're right. They both have long careers in the association space, in the learning business. So figuring out where to focus the conversation was challenging, but it was fun, as always, to talk to these two leaders of learning. We talked a little bit about the timing of their decision to retire in terms of, did they always know this? And then once they decided to make that leap onto the next phase of their life, what did it look like to prepare their organization for that? And then we also spent some time looking back in terms of, you know, what was some of the biggest lessons learned over the course of their career, and, you know, what happened in the career of learning during their time working that was really exciting for them. You know, as you head off into a new phase of life, as each of them is doing with retirement, you know, it's a time, a natural time for reflection. And so that's what we got to do with Carol and Diane, is spend a little bit of time reflecting on the last few decades of learning and what it's meant to them.
Well, I know I, for one, am very much going to miss having each of them out there in their respective positions at their organizations. They're people that I relied upon for advice on many occasions. In fact, they both did advise us on our events. They were on the advisory board for the symposium. And, you know, I think that if you're a listener out there who is working for a learning business of any sort, I know there's going to be a lot of wisdom to be gotten from listening to Diane and Carol. So without further ado, let's roll this exit interview with Carol Hodes and Diane Simmons.
Hello out there. I'm Salisa Steele, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Today is special as I'm joined by not one, but two guests, Carol Hodes and Diane Simmons, both veterans of the learning world. Carol retired from NIGP, the Institute for Public Procurement, about 2 months ago, where she was serving as the Executive Director of Knowledge Management, and Diane, who is the Chief Learning Officer for the American Academy of Dermatology, is a few months away from her planned retirement. And retirement seems like an appropriate time for reflecting on one's career and what one's learned. And so this episode is kind of a podcast swan song, where we get Diane's and Carol's perspectives on what they've learned about learning. So Carol and Diane, thanks very much for making time for the Leading Learning Podcast.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, so to start things off, since I only mentioned kind of your current role, Diane, and your most recent position, Carol, I'd love to have each of you give a brief history of your career, where you've worked and what you've done, especially in terms of learning. So Carol, would you start us off?
Sure. Thanks again for inviting me, Salisa. I'm looking forward to the conversation. As you mentioned, I did recently retire from the Institute for Public Procurement. I was there for about 18 years. So there was quite a bit of transition from the products and services we provided, from redoing textbooks and re-energizing curriculum to bringing technology into our delivery systems. We began a dialogue with academicians about how better to educate public administration students in the area of public procurement. It's been a wonderful ride. It's been 18 years of first, and it changed my life. It was a wonderful place to end my working career.
Well, great. And so, yeah, as you mentioned, you had a long history with NIGP. And Diane, I think, as I understand it, I think that you have a little bit of a different background, maybe working in some different organizations. But tell us, give us the sort of short version of your career history.
Sure. I've been involved in healthcare for my entire career. Worked as a nurse and a hospital administrator for a number of years, and joined the association world about 20 plus years ago, and have served in a variety of capacities with various specialty nursing organizations and healthcare finance organizations, and most recently with the American Academy of Dermatology. All of those stops along the way have been focused on professional development and learning, and helping build the strategic vision for learning and development within each of those areas. I, too, Carol, feel pretty blessed to have had the career options that I've had, and am really pleased that I was able to end my career at a place where I feel like I've made a difference and have really advanced the sort of scope of learning activities for the organization.
Well, that's great. So you both, yes, have a track record working in the association world, working in learning. Let's turn to talking a little bit about timing. I'm curious to know, you know, did you always have sort of a goal date by which you'd retire, or is that something that you arrived at more recently and more organically. And then I'm also thinking about timing in the sense of from when you sort of knew, okay, I want to retire, you know, what was the process like for sharing that and then preparing your organization and team for your departure? And Diane, this time I'll turn to you to start us off.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm not retiring. I'm launching my second childhood without adult supervision. So that's where
I
tend to go next. I've loved my career and loved my work. So I didn't really have a date certain in mind by which I intended to retire. We've had some fortunate experiences as a family here that allowed us to make that decision. But the timing seems right from the perspective of where the organization is in terms of the next steps of development and sort of coupled with my realization that the time is here. You know, I knew I would always know when the right time was, but didn't want to put any boundaries around that. And I think the last several years, just thinking about the possibility of retiring, was actually pretty a pretty dynamic and fluid discussion. Because for someone who's worked their entire career, it's a little daunting to think about that not being there in that structure. But I did give the organization as much advance notice as possible and gave them choices around the timing. Our big annual meeting is in February, so I was willing to stay through that to help the team and the organization through that, and then we'll exit shortly after that.
Well, great. And Diane, I think maybe there was Carol, I think there was sort of a similar timing on your part in that you stayed through your organization's big annual meeting and then sort of exited not long after that. Do I have that right?
That's right. The annual meeting was in August, and I was done shortly thereafter. It was a good time to go, although it was difficult to say goodbye to so many people publicly. Mm-hmm. I would have been very comfortable to just slip away, but some others in my community didn't think that was a good idea. And now to answer your first question, I didn't really have a set date, but I knew, like Diane said, I knew when it was the right time. It just felt right. This is fortunately for me, my third career. I was a public school teacher. Then I left public education to follow my husband, and as he progressed through corporate promotion, so I went into the hospitality industry, wound up being a trainer with them, and that was very rewarding, and sales with hotels and hospitalities in the industry, and then 18 years as an association executive. So who knows what my next opportunity will be, but I believe there's another one there. It's just, I'm just ready for the next challenge.
Well, great. I didn't realize that you had the school teacher background in there as well, so it's not too surprising that you ended up dealing with knowledge management in the end.
I always felt that the things that I did, whether it was teaching school or in the hospitality industry, really prepared me for working in an association. It's all about customer service, and then, of course, the education piece fell together, so... Yes, it was a wonderful blend.
Well, great. And so I'll move on to a next question. It's kind of a big question, which is that when you look back at what you've learned over the course of your careers to date, you know, what's one of the most important lessons you've learned? And I'm thinking, if you want, you could take this from the perspective of what advice would you give to someone who's at an earlier career stage, or what you might have told your younger self if you could have. And Carol, I'm going to start with you this time.
My younger self. I do remember her. She was very... I think the biggest thing for me was that I would have liked to have resolved earlier on was don't be afraid to take risks. There's always good learning that comes from failure. I don't think we allow enough learning as a result from as a result of risk taking. And if something doesn't play out the way you anticipated it or expected the results to be, the piece that seems to be missing is we don't do enough self-assessment or reflection, that delta plus conversation around what went well, what we've done better. And it has to be a very frank conversation with everyone involved. Because if you do take a risk, you certainly don't do it in a silo within an organization. You have to bring in all the other people who have perspectives. So every product, every service, every new idea has implications for the rest of the organization. And so when you look back, what was good, what was bad, you really have to be frank and honest. So I think I would have liked to have been a better risk taker. And so to tell my younger self that it's okay to fail, you know, you've got to try. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I really grabbed hold of, and it sort of plays off on that, was that adult learning, as we've come to know it, it doesn't happen in a bubble. You just can't. This teacher approach to adult learning has to take into account the entire person. These are people that have lives outside their work. These are people that their mothers, their fathers, their grandparents, their caregivers, their volunteers. And you have to work at finding the best way to provide the learning in a way that meets their needs and supports what they're doing at the time. You just can't grab onto the fact, well, whatever the organization or the chapter, the association, the volunteer, that is not their whole life. So you really have to look at the entire person when you provide learning opportunities.
Well, great. Those are two important lessons that you're teaching the whole person and not just that individual who happens to be in the classroom or in the online session or whatever. I like that. And then, too, that idea of kind of reasonable risks and being open to then really honestly assessing the results from taking that risk the good and the bad. So, Diane, you know, how about you? What's an important lesson that you've learned?
Well, I think Carol certainly articulated well the issue about risk, which is something that I think as I look back on my career and the evolution it went through from being a clinician to being an administrator to being on the association side, it certainly involved taking risks, but it also took some imagination, which I think we often discount for people. A mantra that I learned fairly early that I still come back to is staying open to the possibilities. And it sounds cliche, but what I mean by that is, and advice I give our kids all the time is you can't turn down a job you haven't been offered. So learn what you can about what the next opportunity might look like, how it might fit with your skills, and think as creatively as possible about where you might fit in that. And I think that's true for organizations, too, as we work with volunteer leaders and others who, have some insights and input that we don't have. It's sometimes easy to discount that, but trying to find that balance between what's possible and what's imagined, I think, is where the really sweet stuff happens in terms of program development and certainly professional development for individuals. So I think that, you know, again, emphasizing the taking the calculated and measured risks and staying open to those possibilities and finding the compromise between those two sometimes is challenging, but I think it's certainly served me well through my career.
Well, I really liked what you had to say about imagination, because I think that gets mm-hmm. this idea of we're not just reactively kind of taking advantage of what opportunities might, you know, come to us, but that we're also thinking about maybe seeking them out, being a little bit more proactive or responding more creatively to even a risk or opportunity that comes to us. So that's great. So next question, it's another pretty big one, I think. And it's what happened in the learning field during your career that really most excited you? You know, was there some innovation or new technology or an event that really got you excited by its potential for real impact on learning? So, Diane, what comes to mind?
So I think the most exciting thing that's happened, and maybe this is just a personal aha that has evolved, is the transition from education to learning. To the outsider, it may seem like a subtle difference, but I think it's made an enormous impact on the kind of delivery methods and approaches that we're now using. And when we think about it from the learning space, not just the education space, and I think that's the technology is there to support the strategic vision and so on. So I think that's certainly opened up lots of different possibilities. The other thing that I see evolving, and maybe it's sort of an N of one, but is a transition in our thinking from thinking of learning and education as these sort of big, you know, extravaganza kinds of things, to focusing more on the moments of learning, where you can truly make an impact in sort of micro kinds of ways. So I think that's probably been the biggest shift. And again, maybe it's just my personal view, but I think I see that kind of across the board, and I think it's going to be even more powerful for the future.
Yeah, so that move from education to learning, which really kind of gets the, also at that knowing-doing gap, I think, right, that the learning really becomes more embodied mm-hmm. and is actually being applied and therefore having the desired impact. Carol, how about you? Was there a particular innovation or technology or event that stands out that got you really excited about learning and the potential there?
Well, I do agree with Diane that the shift from professional development has really moved toward learning. And I go back to my comments before about acknowledging adults learn differently and shifting it from a learner is meant to feel fortunate that this very big head is in the room and the very big head will tell them everything they need to know, to an environment where the acknowledgement that people are coming together, whether in a small situation or a large situation, and they already bring with them experiences and substantial knowledge that they have the opportunity then to learn from each other, social learning, and acknowledging that everybody comes knowing something and everybody can learn from somewhere else, from someone else. It's heartening to know that it's not teacher-centered anymore, it's learner-centered on every level. Mm-hmm. And that has, mm-hmm. I think, has been impacted t- to the good for technology. Think about those classrooms there when someone spoke for 45 minutes and then there was a test, as opposed to now there's a conversation, there's a 2-minute video, there's small group work. People are engaged in the learning, and technology has added to that, even to the point of we've moved from click and reads to mini engagements online and open conversations. So I don't think the technology has been a driver, but it has been a supporter of shifting to how adults learn and providing opportunities for them to do that.
Yeah, so technology has that democratizing impact that really supports the learners, empowers the learners to draw on their experience and share their experience. Well, great. So that last question I asked you guys to sort of look back in terms of what's happened over the course of the last few decades that's excited you, and now let's look forward. And so when you look at what's on the horizon for learning? What's out there that excites you the most? Carol, what are your thoughts?
Well, learning in general excites me, so that we could just stop there. But advanced applications, the opportunity to provide more than just the basics. Take what you know and flip it 90 degrees and then apply that to a situation. Situational learning, I think, is out there. More competency-based in that I can show I know these 7 things and then I'll do something else, and now you can see I can do 9 more things. So these incremental learning opportunities and then being able to provide limitless options. I think that's all very exciting. We've gone so far from you don't have to go to a conference. You can have a learning experience in any different multiple kinds of ways. That to me is very exciting. We used to be very single focused and very silo driven on how we educate and provide professional development. But no, now it's becoming a continuum, which is very exciting to me.
Yeah, it's almost sort of the diversity of options that are out there, the diverse ways to support the learning and making that happen. Diane, how about for you? What's on the horizon for learning that you find most exciting?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see more of this, Carol phrased it well, of this learner-centric kind of learning, and I think that's going to result in more individualized education as people assess their own competency and skills, help point them to different directions where they can continue the learning. I think we're at kind of this crossroads between, the sort of mass delivery methods for education and the more tailored to the individual. For years we've all said in the association space, the best learning at our conferences happens in the hallways. So how can we replicate the hallway learning to a more targeted approach? And typically that learning has to do with things that are either case-based, from a clinical perspective, or that may be more sort of leadership kind of moments, those kinds of activities. But if we can find a way to tailor that, to meet people where they're at, and take them the next step on their journey, I think that's the exciting thing about the learning space in the future. We all know that there is such incredible access to information, some of it good, some of it not so good, but there's not a lack of information or knowledge out there. It's how to distill that and disseminate that in ways which are going to be readily accessible and available to people. I think that's kind of the next horizon here.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting too. With some of the technology advances, that there's this possibility to take what was a mass offering and tailor that, you know, using mm-hmm. algorithms or, you know, ultimately artificial intelligence to really make it a much more individualized, personalized experience that focuses on what mm-hmm. that particular learner needs. So, what I'm wondering about is you, Carol, you've begun your time away from your organization. You've begun retirement. Diane, you're on the verge of heading out there. I'm wondering what role you see learning playing during your retirement. Diane, what are your thoughts? You're not quite there yet.
Well, this, as I mentioned earlier, I think this is one of the most stressful transitions that you can imagine in your career, because we're heading into some pretty uncharted territory in terms of what the next steps are. And the best advice that I've gotten about making this transition is to just allow myself to be in free fall for a year. And what I mean by that is not having any externally imposed agendas, and to really sort of free up space in my brain or in my soul for what, as Carol mentioned, what that next opportunity might be. I know that I will continue to be engaged in some way, but I think it's important for me to allow that space to begin to define itself in terms of what might occur. And the beauty, frankly, about this stage is being able to have the gift of time to not only spend on those things that mean the most to us, of relationships and family and connection to community and so on, but also the opportunity to learn things that I thought were a luxury, things like that appeal to my creative side and so on. So, you know, who knows? I may have an art gallery in a year, but probably not.
That's great.
But
I just love this idea of learning as luxury, and that you know, feel the sense now, it sounds like, to maybe explore topics or subjects that, you know, you felt like you didn't have the time for.
Right.
And Carol, how about you? What role do you think learning is going to play during your retirement?
It's amazing what you can learn from the newspaper every day. The time you have available when you're working, even to read the newspaper is, mm-hmm. I love Diane's comments about the time to I now have time to reflect and to look at options and things that I thought were mm-hmm. a luxury. So reading the newspaper, it is a pleasure, but I think there will always be learning, because if we're mm-hmm. not learning, whether it's a new skill or learning how to navigate new waters or learning how to function on a trip, whatever it is, if you don't learn, you become stagnant, and that doesn't mm-hmm. sound very mm-hmm. appealing to me. I want to mm-hmm. continue to learn and contribute. I'm very interested mm-hmm. in volunteer work, but as a friend of mine said over lunch the other day, you don't have to do it right yet. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Giving yourself, as Diane very well said, take advantage of the time, this gift you've been given, but the learning has to go on. It has to go on, or mm-hmm. you've been, who wants to be with you at the dinner table if you haven't learned anything to have a good conversation about? So. I'm planning on keeping learning.
Yeah, well, I expected as much from both of you, but I think it's nice to hear that both of you clearly see a role that learning will play, but you're also giving yourself the time to have what you want to do next emerge, what you want to learn next emerge, and not put a lot of pressure on yourself, at least initially, since you're, you know, as you're heading out mm-hmm. into this next phase of life. So we have a question that we like to ask of all the podcast guests when they come on. And so I want to ask that of each of you. And I'm going to start with you, Carol. And the question is just, I'd like to hear about one of the most powerful learning experiences that you've been involved in as an adult, you know, since finishing your formal education. And it, by involved in, that could mean you as a learner, it could mean you as a provider, but you know, what's a really powerful learning experience that, that you've had?
My association supports a certification program, and at one point during my career, I was doing a lot of traveling and promoting the certification and being that cheerleader to encourage people to get certified and advancing the profession through certification and what people could do for themselves, that it was their own, they owned it, it wasn't something for their organization, it was for them. So one day, I was speaking at a luncheon in Georgia, and I gave my cheerleader rah-rah speech. This is for you. This is how. Here are the tools available to you. This is how we'll help you. And then we sat down for lunch, and a woman sitting next to me asked me when I got certified. I tried to graciously explain that I was not certified and that I was not eligible because I was not a practitioner. And she graciously, but still, accused me of being disingenuous. How could I preach certification if I had not even made that commitment to myself? It was very humbling. So then it was like, well, I can't keep doing this if I walk the talk thing. So that was when I made the decision to prepare and sit and fortunately pass the CAE exam. So as a result of being challenged by someone who I thought I was helping, in fact, they helped me take a risk, be more honest, walk the talk, learn more, embrace the profession that I was immersed in. It embodied everything that I believed in and the mission and the vision of the organization believed in. And then now I was challenged to face the same things that the people I respected so much were facing. It was life-changing. It was truly life-changing. And then I think it made me a better provider, because because I understood what some of these people were feeling. You know, there's nothing, the pain in waiting for that little envelope that says whether you passed or you, it's quite serious to the people going through it. So that, for me, was the most dramatic, I guess, experience. It was very powerful.
Yeah, so a learning process, the pursuing the CAE, that got sparked really by some insight that a conversation led to.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. Diane, how about you? When you look back, what's one of the most powerful learning experiences that you've been involved with?
Well, I think to Carol's earlier point, one of the most profound learning experiences I have was being involved with an association that was a small association that was in significant crisis, and it felt like a firestorm living through it. But it was the ultimate lab for learning and really, really embodying the principles that we've all learned in leadership development that have to do with integrity, that have to do with clarity of communication, that have to do with with focus and vision and, you know, all of the attributes that, again, we learn about in theory. And it was the ultimate application lab of putting those practices to order. And very painful to go through at the time. But in retrospect, I learned more about myself as a leader and about what matters to me as a leader in terms of skills and behaviors than probably anything else I've ever done. And the other point that I would make is I think about the big aha moments in my career, they are that. They are just moments that may be learning that happens sort of casually or formally or as a result of an experience. So that's kind of my fascination with learning moments of really, really finding a way to capitalize on those.
That's great. So yeah, I think you both sort of hit on that, those aha moments, because Carol, it sounds like when you had that conversation over lunch, that was a big aha moment that led to other for you. And Diane, then what you were saying around, I think it's an important point that sometimes when we learn the most, it's not always pleasant that we sometimes right. have to endure.
I don't recommend it, but it was very effective.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, you really enjoy
moments when you have to go through it to get to it.
Right.
That's right. That's exactly right, Carol. Yeah.
And so thank you very much for both of your time. I just want to wrap up by giving you each a chance to offer any final thoughts. Diane, anything else that you would like to add before we say goodbye?
Well, just the one point that I would make is that I think we all learn best in community. So staying attached to your tribe or your peeps or whoever else can help you really accelerate your learning and the learning opportunities for your organization. I think that's the piece of advice that I would give.
Well, that's very nice, and I think that I see this and you each taking time to have this conversation today is a way of you supporting the tribe and supporting people who are in mm-hmm. the positions you all have been in, so I appreciate that. Carol, how about from your end, any parting words or final thoughts?
Your tribe, I think the community, I think that's a great place to start. So I think we all encourage everybody to keep listening to one another, keep learning mm-hmm. from one another, and keep living, because it's all worthwhile.
Wonderful. Well, great. Thank you both so much. I've really enjoyed it.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, Salisa. Nice to be with you, Diane.
You too. Best wishes, Carol.
Good luck.
That wraps up our interview with Carol Hodes and Diane Simmons. To get show notes for this episode, just go to leadinglearning.com/episode110. And while you're there, you can grab our resource document for the episode, appropriately titled Resources for Organizations and the Business of Lifelong Learning.
And while you're there looking at those show notes, you're going to see various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of what you hear, and if you aren't yet subscribed, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe.
And we'd also be grateful if you'd take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. All you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. That'll put you in the right place. It only takes a few minutes to give us a star rating, hopefully 5 stars, put in a brief review, and that helps others know what the podcast is about, what's valuable about it, helps them find it, and of course, it makes us feel kind of good if you go and do a review like that.
We also hope you will tell others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share, or if tweeting isn't your thing, you can pick another social network of your preference and spread the good word that way.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.